With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Indie Football Podcast. I'm your host Luke Brown, and joining me in the studio this week we have columnist Tony Evans and, making his first appearance of the season, football writer Jack Rathbun. Hello, gents.
Hello. Nice to be here, Luke.
We're recording this podcast on Wednesday afternoon, which is the day after Chelsea's 1-0 loss to Valencia in the Champions League and a few days before their match against Liverpool. And now seems like quite a good point, really, to assess the first few weeks of Frank Lampard's reign. There have been highs, with Chelsea's youngsters running riot in last weekend's 5-2 victory over Wolves, but there have also been some pretty bitter lows, from the opening weekend loss to United, to defeat in the Super Cup, to last night's disappointing result. We're going to be asking, have there been any signs of progress since Lampard replaced Maurizio Sarri? Are Chelsea's young players good enough? And what should the club realistically be hoping to achieve this season? But before all of that, Valencia, Tony, you were at Stamford Bridge last night. First off, before we get into the match, what did you make of the mood around Stamford Bridge before kickoff?
Well, I think it's all very positive. I mean, people believe in Frank Lampard and they want him to be successful. And there's a certain element of the Chelsea support, and I think it's the vast majority of them, that are willing to take a poor season for Lampard to reset the way things have been done at the club. So there was a fair amount of positivity, which... And especially after the results with Wolves. But I don't think it's really warranted. I think it's going to be a very difficult season for Chelsea.
Did you notice the kind of mood changing at all, like during the match? Obviously, Ross Barkley missed a late penalty in quite kind of controversial fashion where he demanded to take it and then hit the crossbar. Was there kind of, you know, visible frustration, or is it a kind of very tranquil place at the moment?
Yeah, it was fairly quiet. There wasn't the outrage that we've seen over recent years with various managers. I say Lampard's got such a stock of goodwill that it'll probably last for quite a while. I can see it getting a bit poisonous after Christmas, but. I think there's an awareness that the way Chelsea were doing things, the way they were going through managers and downgrading the role of the manager, which they've done since Mourinho left in 2007, that there needed to be a change of philosophy there, and the period of that change will be very, very difficult. And Lampard's probably the only manager who could have gone in there and had the grace allowed to him from the crowd to do this. So, I mean, I think there's a little bit of grumbling, but none of it particularly visible.
Rafa, what did you make of the match itself? Because Chelsea started well enough. For those who didn't see the match, they kind of dominated a lot of the early kind of proceedings, but then conceded a second half goal, missed the late penalty and lost 1-0.
Yeah, it started off pretty well, I think, as far as Lampard was concerned. And then the key moment pretty much of the game was when Mason Mount was hurt from a challenge from Coquelin.
Which was definitely a red card.
Yeah, I think it could have been another day for sure, and pretty unfortunate because Mount just really is the spark for this team at the moment, which is a bit of an indictment on the rest of the squad. I mean, Lampard's brought a lot of positivity, but I think the fact that they're so reliant on Mount to spark the pressing, I mean, he started it earlier on in the season against Leicester, and he really has been the inspiration for this team. But as soon as he went off, it just became a bit more stagnant. Valencia grew into the game and just became a lot more composed in the midfield. I thought they were comfortable as such, even though Chelsea enjoyed large spells of possession. But certainly, I think Chelsea probably didn't deserve to win the game outright. But then sucker punch came from that Rodrigo goal, and Lampard bemoaned the fact that at this level you do get punished. I mean, it's an argument to say that Kepa maybe could have done a lot better for that goal, but... Yeah, the margins are fine, and when Chelsea aren't able to have that real cutting edge up top, I think Abraham was a bit more subdued than maybe most would have expected, certainly going into the game with seven goals in Premier League. There's still plenty to work on, and it's going to become a real sort of cold reality come Sunday when they take on Liverpool, because there's only so long this goodwill will last. Tony mentions maybe up till Christmas it should be fine for Lampard, but there's still a lot to work on for this side despite the positive start.
Was the lack of cutting edge the problem? Because until now for Chelsea, it's been more kind of defensive issues, hasn't it? They haven't looked that solid at the back. They've been caught quite a lot in the Premier League with quite sloppy goals. But last night, they looked a bit more resolute and then just couldn't kind of produce the goods up front.
Yeah, I mean, the problem was that Valencia were sort of really ponderous on the ball and they didn't move it very quickly. So they didn't get forward enough. I mean, Chelsea are really vulnerable on the break. I mean, the system Lampard plays, it's going to get found out badly. I mean, when you play two midfielders, and particularly the two midfielders he played last night, they get overrun really easily. So, but because Valencia sat deep, Valencia's default was... Let's take a point here. They let Chelsea come onto them. I thought Abraham played quite well, but the support for him was absolutely appalling. And the other thing that struck me is every time the ball went into the area in the air, Chelsea won the header, well, almost every time. And yet they never sort of used that sort of advantage enough, and they never swung the ball often enough into Abraham. You know, if I would have been Lampard, you know, I might have got Giroud off the bench a bit earlier and got an aerial bombardment on there. All right, it's a bit agricultural, but probably would have worked. But, you know, I mean, Willian and Pedro, who replaced Mount, obviously, were really poor, and they didn't give Abraham the support and the movement around him that he needs to thrive.
That's a worrying thing for Chelsea, isn't it? You know, we're going to come on to talk about the younger players in greater detail, but, you know, the spotlight is on all these younger players, and yet the likes of Willian, Pedro, they're the players who should be delivering, and they seem to be the players who are particularly out of form at the moment.
Yeah, I think Pedro was especially poor last night. I thought Willian did some good things. I thought he was, particularly in that first half, he took some players on and is willing to sort of move the ball forward and bring Valencia's players out and force them to sort of dislodge their fixed positions. But certainly going forward, Tony mentions the lack of service into the box. I think it became apparent Aspilicueta, we know what he is. He's not able to sort of penetrate down the right. So Chelsea have got a bit of an issue there, I think. And it's going to be interesting to see whether he switches back to a back three, whether he can involve a more attack-minded wing-back. I'm not sure if there's many other options. Reece James, maybe. Pedro's played as a wing-back at times, so I don't know if that's something you want to be risking against Liverpool. But yeah, certainly it's an issue, because right at the end, when, as Tony mentioned, they're crying out for service in the box, especially when Giroud came on, you've got players like Marcos Alonso who's having a shot from range despite the penalty area absolutely crammed with targets. So certainly Lampard can be proud of the way he's got this up-tempo style. It's more penetrative than under Sarri, more verticality, if you will. But yeah, there's enough in that squad to be able to go long, to mix it up. And at the moment, I think he's a little bit too loyal to the way he wants to play. They should have changed it earlier last night.
We'll come on to Lampard's tactics in just a moment. But what did you make of Valencia? Because I watched them home and away against Arsenal last season. They lost 7-3 on aggregate. They were awful. They were really bad. They lost their manager last week, I think it was, a couple of weeks ago. So they kind of turned up at Stamford Bridge in disarray and yet cobbled together a fairly good performance.
Well, I mean, I suppose you got to judge it by the paucity of Chelsea's cutting edge. You know, they sat deep. For 20 minutes, they showed absolutely no ambition at all. And then suddenly they thought, well, hang on, you know, we might be able to get something here and get the ball forward. And then the passing got a little bit crisper. But essentially, they were waiting for Chelsea to make a mistake. And there's enough experience in the Valencia team, and there's enough nous to take advantage of a mistake, which Chelsea didn't do. And the goal was, you know, it was a very well-worked goal. I mean, you know, you just knock the ball into the area, run across the face of the whole defence and angle yourself in. And it's the sort of goal that, you know, you should never score. Well, you should never concede. And the worst thing from a Chelsea point of view is that the nearest man was Abraham at the end, and he was essentially on the end, waiting to pick up his man, but went with the runner, and it was absolutely stunning. And I don't think Valencia were that good at all. I think there are clear underlying problems there. Say defensively, they're weak in the air. They don't pass the ball with any conviction, and they weren't sending the runners from midfield. But you know, you've won away in the Champions League. You've got 3 points, and they're in a much better position to Chelsea than qualify. And it'll be very, very difficult when Chelsea go over to Spain.
Yeah, I was going to say, Valencia are 100% going to score at the Mestalla. Where do you think this leaves Chelsea's attempts to get out of the group? Because it's not, on paper, it looked like a not too bad group. But if you're losing home games to Valencia in the Champions League, you can have a bit of a struggle.
Yeah, I think Valencia, certainly nothing to be feared. I think Chelsea could go out to the Mestalla and win. But yeah, this was a side that was just waiting for Chelsea to sort of show their hand as such. And that two in the midfield, Kondogbia and Parejo, they should have been hassled and hurried a lot more than maybe they were, because I mean, it just shows that without Mount, without Kante, I mean, he would have been so important last night to really press further forward and maybe force the turnovers in that final third. But yeah, just wasn't there. And I think Valencia are really going to grow in confidence as they get away from the Marcelino era. I think the group is really delicately poised. I think Lille, maybe if Chelsea get their game together, could be the side to be cut adrift. But certainly Ajax look the strongest side, and it's going to go probably to the wire for Chelsea. They will need to pick up a result at the Mestalla and probably win both games against Lille, because it's going to be difficult to take more than 3 points over the two games against Ajax. So, yeah, it's a tough predicament for Chelsea. And I think it's not a disaster. I still think it's certainly achievable to get that runners-up spot. But, yeah, it's going to be a fascinating group, and maybe one of the more intriguing ones in as far as the whole competition is concerned moving forward.
Moving on to Lampard more specifically, Tony, you criticised his system in your analysis piece, I think it was, and just now today. Do you think he was too naive to play that system in the Champions League? Because he's been quite gung-ho in the Premier League, which is one thing, but history tells us in the Champions League, if you kind of attack and if you leave yourself short at the back, you're going to get punished for it. So do you think he was kind of, yeah, a bit too naive, maybe underestimated Valencia, or was he just playing with the kind of the players he's got available to him?
I think it's a combination of all those things. Certainly, given the injuries he's got. I mean, I think if Kante would have been available, he would have set up very, very differently. And even Rudiger, you know, sort of maybe he wouldn't have gone to it. But the problem is, so much of the way he set up last night, and to a certain extent the same was the true of Wolves, was dependent on the full-backs, and get the wing-backs, get them forward and causing problems. And they didn't really do that. And when two of your front three are having really poor nights, and your fullbacks are struggling to give you any dynamism on the wings, then you're going to have issues. And then it meant frequently there was just two men in midfield, and it was easy for even a subpar Valencia to overrun them in their area, and Valencia were getting a lot of joy down the middle.
If things don't change, what do you think he's going to compromise on first? Do you think he's going to compromise on kind of individuals that are letting him down? Or do you think he compromises on the system and maybe reins in how attacking he's playing, or switches to a different system altogether?
It'd be interesting to see whether the introduction of Callum Hudson-Odoi will change things, because certainly he can add that pace, that penetration. Whether Reece James is another option for him. I do think that Lampard has a little bit of versatility with his systems. He could go back to back four. There's enough there, but I just think it's one of those where the squad suits the back three, but I'm not sure whether it's the right approach for his idealism that he wants to take it to teams. And I think, yeah, he's stuck in two minds a little bit. I think moving forward, he will need to shore up the back, because there's a vulnerability there. Zouma looks shaky to me. Everything he does seems to be hard work. I think Tomori's been a positive, but yeah, Rudiger is absolutely vital to come back in. And once he's there, I think it just makes everything a little bit more stable. Those two in the midfield, they sometimes lack a little bit of, I don't know, something just to commit teams. I think Jorginho, just frustrates a little bit. But Kovacic has got so much more in his locker, but it's just waiting to come out, and it needs the right foundation behind him. He can take players on, but I think he's sort of a little bit reluctant when Kante's not there. So Kante is honestly the key to this team. I think once he's there, he just enables everything to sort of run a little bit more smoothly, and maybe that front three or in the final third, they can be a little bit more dangerous when Hudson-Odoi gets there. Pulisic, obviously, we're waiting on him to settle in England.
Yeah, a lot of fans are unhappy he didn't come off the bench last night when Chelsea were kind of pushing for the equaliser.
I think there's a lot of wishful thinking going on at Chelsea. you know, Tomori, has got potential, but his pace gets him out of trouble that he gets himself into frequently. And Pulisic, well, I mean, it's one of those situations where I've spoken to a lot of people about him, and obviously he's a big star for the United States team, and you know, probably people are talking about him being America's best export and things like that. He strikes me as being very similar to a ton of academy players who come out in, you know, sort of the Premier League, and you know, very neat in the passing, a little bit lightweight. I mean, almost like the sort of player who came out 5 years ago. You know, the Brendan Rodgers type of player. Brendan would have loved him, but you know, what was really telling to me is that I spoke to Jadon Sancho a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about going to Dortmund. He couldn't see his way. He couldn't see a route to the first team at Man City. He thought, you know, going to Dortmund. And he said, you know, I looked at Christian. He said, and I saw he was in the first team. He thought, you know, I can get into that team. And he wasn't being, you know, so I wrote about it today. He wasn't being disrespectful in the sense, you know, I'm better than him. But it was like, yeah, that's, you know, well, basically, he was saying I'm better than him, because football is like that. You know, it's a very Darwinian sort of business. You know, you look and you say, where can I get into the team? You know, and he saw that route. And in once upon a time, when in Lampard's glory days at Chelsea, they bought players that when they were in the team, you'd be like, oh, you know, who could replace him? You know, how could you get in the team with Drogba? You know, it's, you know, Lampard, you know, you were never going to displace them because they were so good, they were so strong, they were mentally so tough. But Chelsea are now buying players who you think, maybe not, and promoting players.
Do you think they bought Pulisic expecting him to come in and essentially fulfil that Hazard role, or do you think they bought him to develop him, but because of the departure of Hazard, he's now kind of been foisted with this really unenviable task?
I think they knew quite well that Hazard was leaving.
Yeah.
And they had to get a player who could fill a similar or perform a similar role. And I mean, again, I wrote this today, they rarely traded down when they made those deals. And it's I hope he comes good, because he is a really, you know, sort of, he's a really committed professional and a nice fella and all that. And he has a bit of talent, but I don't know whether he's got the nous and the trickery to beat Premier League defenders on a regular basis. And I don't know whether he's got the scope to develop and grow in the way that someone like Raheem Sterling did. You know, Raheem, you know, sort of, in his first year, everyone worked out his trick. So you know what? He got himself another one or two or three, and he's just blossomed and become better every year. I don't know whether Pulisic has got that room to grow.
I think he's under the microscope, isn't he, because of the Hazard departure. Let's not forget this was the best player in the Premier League last season, probably the best player over the last 5 years. So it's a little bit unfair to judge him this quickly, because he's only 21, just gone 21. So he's a very young player, and he's coming to a new league. But I think you're right, Tony, he needs to get a little bit more, he needs to round his game off a little bit, because there are sparks there. Lampard has reservations about whether he can be trusted off the ball to do that extra work. Against Liverpool in the Super Cup, I thought tremendous when going forward, following his passes, looking for those spaces and sort of moving Liverpool around a little bit. I thought that was promising, but it's not enough. It's little flashes here and there at the moment, and yeah, there's a reason why he wasn't involved last night. I think Lampard is looking for someone who can, he can't afford passengers at the moment. That's the point at the moment.
I think if Lampard's in the job in January, they don't do that deal.
In the dream Lampard 11 that maybe Chelsea fans are envisaging, does he play with Hudson-Odoi or instead?
I think in a year's time, I think that would be the ideal for Chelsea, but maybe not Lampard. It's interesting to know what he thinks of a player in the long term. But I think there's options there moving forward when they eventually move on one of Willian and Pedro. But they're probably going to look to buy another one in that area. I think certainly Pulisic wouldn't have been expected to fill Hazard solely by himself. But yeah, I think it's interesting to know whether they want him to just come in and play a protagonist role, whether they can rely on Mount. Mount's a tremendous goal scoring option, more so maybe than Pulisic. Hudson-Odoi looks like he's got a little bit more end product as well. But when you get those attacking threats, those dangerous options, it will definitely help someone like Pulisic, because he'll have someone who can combine with him, and I think that's what he needs at the moment. There's less options at his disposal to link with, and I think that's the issue.
We've got to go to a break in a couple of minutes. Just before we do, I just want to ask one more question on Lampard. He's obviously turned up at Chelsea. He's got this really clear determination to play in a specific, adventurous, kind of exciting way, which is laudable, and a lot of people have kind of applauded him for that. Do you think as a young manager, though, you have to earn the right? You have to kind of come to a club with a history of success before you implement something like that? And that as a younger manager, you should potentially be more pragmatic and concentrate first on picking up points. Do you think that, or do you think that, no, actually, he's a young manager, he's come in, he's got this vision, and great, let's stick to it and see what happens?
I think pragmatism is everything. I think you've got to. Rafa Benitez once said to me, he said, the future's only 8 games. You know, that's what it comes down to. Now, Lampard, as we've discussed, is lucky because he's got a longer term to develop without becoming under pressure and getting sacked. But the reality is you've got to get your act together and you've got to get moving in the right direction pretty quickly. I think being much more pragmatic would suit Chelsea. I mean, I wonder whether, the players they've got, whether that suits. Horror, 4-4-2. I know I'm a dinosaur, but I wonder whether that's worked better for them and playing in a more structured manner and basically getting a grip on the midfield first. I mean, especially when you've got Kante there, you know, I think that would be a way forward. I think it's all well and good to want to play fantastic football, but you know, then you get into the Arsene Wenger syndrome, don't you? You know, it's...
I think he's trying to run before he can walk almost, because none of the best managers in the world started off their managerial careers playing in the kind of style that has come to define them. Like Pep Guardiola had a long time at Barcelona B, and Rafa obviously playing a different way to how you would imagine a kind of typical Rafa teams play at the beginning. So it just seems, I don't know, maybe he's being too ambitious.
Well, I mean, you know, so you look at those managers and the best managers, what they do is they look at the players at the disposal and say, what'll suit them? No, how can I fit these into my system? So, I think if he plays that setup that he utilised against Valencia, against Liverpool, a fear for Chelsea.
Okay, time for a quick break. When we get back, we're going to be digging a little deeper into Chelsea's squad, and we're going to attempt to figure out exactly what the club should be aspiring to achieve this season.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the Indie Football Podcast. This week we're talking all things Chelsea and their youth revolution, and we should probably take a closer look at their playing squad. So, Tony, before we actually get into talking about the younger players, do you think the youth revolution line has kind of been overstated a little bit? Because last night against Valencia, they actually had a series of kind of first team players out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's enough experience at the club to, to basically, they shouldn't be naive. there are senior players who've been round the block, and there was enough of them on display last night to not produce such a callow performance. In fact, they were the ones I'd be critical of rather than the young players. You know, the young players, well, largely did well. They didn't come under too much pressure, to be fair. You know, the centre-halves had a relatively easy night, even though everyone switched off for the goal. We didn't see much of Mason Mount. And Tammy Abraham was good. I mean, he's developing into a proper leader of the line. You know, he dropped off, knocked the ball on. His movement was very good. But there are senior players there who should be performing better for Lampard and who should be... I mean, even Ross Barkley is never exactly young in the sense of sort of we're talking about now. He's been around a long while. And if you just look at the penalty was a classic example of what's wrong there with everyone. You know, an argument between senior players who takes the penalty, you know, Jorginho, Willian and Barkley. And it's all right saying that Barkley's the designated penalty kicker. When he's on the pitch, he takes the penalties. But, I mean, I do wonder of the logic of letting a substitute who's only recently come onto the pitch take the penalty when there's players who've been, you know, sort of involved in the game and sort of the psychology. And what Willian did, you know, when almost Willian disrupted Barkley before the penalty. And that's, so, I mean, the revolution that Lampard needs to do is not with the youth, really. It's with the senior players and get the best out of them. And at the moment, he's not.
Rafa, which of those younger players has kind of most impressed you so far this season? I suppose Abraham and Mason Mount would be the principal ones.
Yeah, certainly. I think Mount's been outstanding, and I think even before the goals, I think Abraham showed enough that without the goals, he can be that complete nine for Chelsea. I think he's got a bit of nous when he holds it up, lays it off, and I think there's promise there. But obviously, he needs to prove himself against superior centre backs last night. Maybe was a little reality check after his recent hot streak. But I think Tomori, Tony's mentioned, is a little bit rough around the edges. But I don't think he needs to be overly concerned that his pace is getting him out of trouble. I mean, that's such a weapon. I think he operates much more smoothly than someone like Zuma, for example, who's also quick. But maybe
surely got no future at Chelsea.
I don't think so. I think certainly Tomori has shown that he could displace him in the pecking order. I think Hudson-Odoi, before his Achilles injury, has shown that he's ready to contribute right now. Certainly Southgate thinks as much. So I think there are options there. Maybe not even this season. I think you look next season, Ampadu, I think he's already shown that he's a very composed player, tactically maybe even the most intelligent of all those young Chelsea players. Whether he plays enough at Leipzig, I'm not too sure. But he can come back and he'll play half a dozen games for Wales in the meantime. It's one of those where Lampard needs to do enough to sort of ride the scepticism. Remember, this is a side that was not tipped to make the top four. So the fact that he should be in the running, because Arsenal are still showing that they are Arsenal, United are having a little bit of an issue. Certainly Spurs are moving maybe slightly backwards. So just by default, they should be in the mix. But I think this is a team that is a long way from being complete. Yeah. January, they may have the ban halved, so they could go and get some players there. And you'd think without investing huge money in the summer, obviously they did end up buying or paying the money for Kovacic, they should be investing big money in the next summer's window. So yeah, but I think there's opportunity for Chelsea to progress quite quickly in a year's time. But I think at the moment, they just need to sort of tread water a little bit. The young players getting these minutes, I think it's invaluable. And you're going to see even more of that when Loftus-Cheek comes back from injury. I think James as well was denied a loan move, so he's probably going to be the benefactor. Loftus-Cheek is going to need to sort of work back into a 3-4-3, which doesn't necessarily suit him.
I was going to say as well, we should kind of clarify this entire podcast, because whenever we do a podcast like this and we really drill into a team, you know, it's easier to kind of scrutinise what's going badly or what's going wrong. But Chelsea, obviously, they're level on points with Arsenal, Spurs, United. And their win over Wolves, I mean, the Spurs won such a high after that. That seemed like one of the more kind of important results of recent times at Chelsea. I mean, Rafa, do you want to kind of maybe, like, I don't know, surmise why that result was kind of so positive for the club?
I think just because of the cutting edge in that final third, it showed that Wolves are a team which usually do not give up huge opportunities. I mean, they've proven, certainly in those games against top six opponents, they hold their own, they're rigid, they're stubborn, and Chelsea just tore them to pieces at times. Obviously, they sort of regressed to the mean a little bit in that second half when they allowed them straight back into the game at that fragility. They need to learn to bend and not break a little bit. But that was a really positive result, and it showed that they can sort of keep on the coattails of those other top four challenges. And if they're in the running, you would expect this to be a team that smooths out some of those issues post-January. So I think it's more important for teams like Arsenal to build that lead over a side like Chelsea if they are going to make top four.
Okay, final Chelsea question before hero and villain. Tony, we hear a lot about the Chelsea project. That's what kind of everyone talks about, what everybody writes about. What club model do you think the board are essentially trying to replicate? Because if you look in the Premier League, it took Pochettino a couple of years to kind of make a success of Spurs and make them competitive with younger players. You look at Liverpool, which are obviously the club everyone wants to kind of copy at the moment, and that's a kind of project that's been, you know, made possible through quite significant investment, which Chelsea want to move away from. So what do you think, you know, Chelsea kind of hold up as the ideal project that they're maybe trying to kind of copy?
I don't think they've got any clear idea of what they want. And I think it's for a long time, you know, as we've discussed, they had the idea, the Chelsea model, this is the way we do it. And we've been successful. And we're going to continue doing it this way. Even if you think we're all stupid for sacking managers all the time, the turnover, we're winning trophies. Well, at some point, the law of diminishing returns means that it's not going to work. And they've had to reset, and they're not entirely sure which way they want to go. They brought Lampard in, and there's a bit of, oh, yeah, we'd like to do it a bit the Liverpool way and get players, you know, go and find players who can come in and grow and develop and have sell-on value. But, I mean, the reality is what changed things for Klopp and Liverpool was spending big money on proven quality. And Abramovich, for a whole host of reasons, mainly political, doesn't want to spend big money. So they're in this no man's land at the moment. And I think we'll start to see how they want to develop going forward in the next 3 or 4 months. But I think it's going to be a very painful process.
Okay, thank you, gents. Just before we go, we've got time for a hero and villain of the week. So, Jack, do you maybe have a hero?
I think maybe look at someone like Erling Haaland for Salzburg last night to score a hat-trick. I think it's going to...
He's got a famous dad, apparently. I don't know if you...
Yeah, I think everybody's heard of him. Leeds-born Erling Haaland, I think, is his full name. I think, yeah, to score a hat-trick and show that Salzburg are on the map now as a threat of the top tier of European football. They've sort of been bubbling away in the Europa League before, but this is a really exciting young team. They do things a little bit differently, promote young players. So, yeah, I think he'd be my hero this week.
And Tony, who's your villain?
I think Coughlin, because the challenge on Mason Mount. But he's a villain even more, because every Arsenal fan would be going, like, why didn't he do that when he was playing for Arsenal? I mean, did he ever put a challenge in?
Yeah. That was, I mean, how that wasn't a red card, I got absolutely no idea.
No, it's just it was a disgraceful challenge.
Yeah. All right, thank you. Sadly, that's all we've got time for this week. Be sure to follow Indie Football on social media to keep up to date with everything going on. We've also got a new rugby podcast which is going to be running throughout the Rugby World Cup, so keep an eye out for that. And if you're a new listener, please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you listen. And we'll see you next week. Goodbye.